TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Myron on Hoops with Myron Metcalf.
Myron Metcalf back here on Myron on Hoops on Score North, scorenorth.com, with the one and only Manny Fresh Hill. The few times we've done the show so far, Manny, we've been blessed with some great news. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't have to stretch to go find interesting things. It just falls on into our laps, right? It's All-Star Weekend, and everybody's talking about that. And we're obviously going to talk about that and the Minnesota Timberwolves representation. But Dell Demps got fired.
Yeah.
The GM of the New Orleans Pelicans after a bizarre situation last night where Anthony Davis is playing. He hurts his shoulder. We don't know the extent of the damage, but he apparently leaves the arena, Manny. Apparently he just, you know, was so frustrated with his trade demands not being met. Guy just walks out of the arena. Alvin Gentry is asked about it. And this dumpster fire started when Rich Paul, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis's agent said Anthony wanted out before the trade deadline, about a week before the trade deadline. The Pelicans claimed that they were having talks with different teams, but ultimately Dell Demps, as GM, decided to keep him on the roster. Now, what's the problem with that? We all said, Manny, this is going to be a disaster. You're going to have a guy on your roster who has publicly stated that he does not want to be here. You are going to have to deal with the backlash of that with no guarantee in this offseason that you'll get some of the same offers. I know everyone's talking about Boston Celtics and what can happen there. Anthony Davis has reportedly said he doesn't want to sign long-term with Boston.
Right.
So why would Boston give up assets to get him?
Right. And if you're the Boston Celtics and you may possibly, and I think it's probably more likely now than not, that Kyrie Irving could be leaving.
Yes.
And if Kyrie Irving is going to leave Boston, what incentive does Anthony Davis have to wanting to go to Boston if Kyrie Irving is not going to be there?
Not one, not nothing. There's no reason for him to go there. This is a mess. It's a bigger mess than I think even a Dell Demps can anticipate. Dell Demps got fired on his day off, Manny. Okay, this is All-Star Weekend. You're supposed to be at home, chilling, relaxing. This is when players get like a few days off if you're not in the All-Star game. And Dell Demps gets fired. Really? Because he didn't pull the trigger on what seemed to me to be an easy trade with the Lakers, Manny.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like that was going to be the most logical move. I mean, the Lakers were pretty much giving up everything in the kitchen sink to get Anthony Davis. And yeah.
They were going to give up the Pelicans Hollywood sign, Magic Johnson, Ice Cube was in the trade, I was told. Like, they were going to give you anything you wanted from L.A. Manny, but this is why GMs matter. And this is why Scott Layden matters, right? We could have all the conversations we want to have about the head coaching situation with the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? To me, Ryan Saunders, I would give him the job. Unless you know for sure you've got a Fred Hoiberg locked up, I give him the gig. That's secondary to what happens with Scott Layden. Because what the Dell Demps situation proves, and really it's not proves because we all know this, Manny, it's that you'd better get the GM right. Because coaches, if you give them the right groceries, a lot of them will look good, even if they're not as good as the production suggests. But if you don't have a GM who can navigate some of those situations like you had in New Orleans, navigate a situation that one day you might have with the Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, how are you going to surround him with better talent? What are you going to do this offseason to make a guy like that feel like, yeah, I feel good about where I am? And I'm not having, you know, talk tonight at the All-Star festivities with Giannis and D'Angelo Russell about, hey, man, what do we do in the future? Maybe we put together our own team. Scott Layden or whoever's in that role, Manny, that is a far more important conversation, in my opinion, than what happens with Ryan Saunders and the head coaching job.
I agree. And I think that when you look at what has happened with the Pelicans, you realize that a big reason why they're in this situation in itself, the big reason why Anthony Davis wants out and, you know, wants to play for the Lakers or New York or wherever he's thinking about wanting to be, it sounds like he wants to be a Laker because of LeBron and the Rich Paul connection and all that stuff. But The whole reason why Anthony Davis wants out is because the Pelicans and Dell Demps didn't, over the course of the time that Anthony Davis has been with the New Orleans Hornets / Pelicans, they haven't done a good enough job surrounding him with enough players to be good enough for them to win. I mean, Drew Holiday's a nice player. He's a good player, but it's not enough. And you see where they're at right now, and this is part of the reason why they're in the situation that they're in right now, because they have not done a good enough job of building around him. And now, after being there for 7 years, he wants out. He wants to move on.
And, you know, to your point, that was Alvin Gentry, I think, has a good relationship with Davis. It was the talent around him. It was the things that Gentry didn't control. I think we sometimes mistake sort of how relationships work in the NBA, right? Like your coach can have a great relationship with every player on his roster, but if there's an executive disconnect, if there's a sense that your star player, like you said, isn't being surrounded with talent that can help him compete, you've got a problem. Mm-hmm. And Scott Layden, at the opportunity at the trade deadline to be a buyer or a seller, was neither. He just said, okay, we're going to roll with this. We're going to roll the dice. We're going to move forward and see what happens. That's fine if it works, right? And if the team that showed up and beat the Houston Rockets the other night, if that team keeps showing up and Josh locked down Okogie, if that guy keeps showing up, then guess what? You're on to something. But I do think Scott Layden has some huge decisions, or whoever's going to be in that role, in terms of what's the makeup of this team going to be. What do you do with that Wiggins deal? What do you do with that Wiggins contract? Because that's going to be an ongoing conversation that you have to have. What are you going to do with a Derrick Rose, a Gibson, all these other veterans who are on this team? Do you keep a Tyus Jones? Is that guy going to play a bigger role going forward with this team? Does Jeff Teague decide to stay? If he doesn't decide to stay, what do you do? These are not Ryan Saunders questions, man.
Right.
These are GM questions, right? But we've spent so much time, and I'm guilty of it too, Manny, guilty of focusing on what happens with the head coaching position, where Ryan Saunders or Phil Jackson or whoever you want to bring in can't do anything if there's not enough talent to work with.
You know, and I like Ryan a lot, and I'm rooting for him. I think a lot of people here in Minnesota are rooting for Ryan Saunders to do well and rooting for the team to do well. But ultimately, Myron, if they're going to make a change at GM at the end of the season, which I think a lot of people are anticipating that happening, with that they're going to move on from Scott Layden, if they make that decision, whoever they bring in, that person has to be the one to make the decision on who the head coach is going to be. You know what I mean? Like that, because that person is going to be in charge of basketball operations. They're going to be the one that is going to have to make the tough decision on whether or not Tyus Jones is going to be a part of the future, whether or not they want to bring back Derrick Rose. And it's going to be a lot of tough decisions to make, because you already have a bunch of hefty contracts that are locked into next season and beyond. In, you mentioned Andrew Wiggins, you got Gorgui Dieng making $16-17 million a year now, and you're not getting much production from him. Yeah. So you got to figure out, you know, if whoever the GM is going to be, they have to decide, okay, I like Tyus Jones. I want to keep Tyus Jones around. But Tyus Jones is going to be a restricted free agent. So somebody can swoop in and sign him to an offer sheet. And depending on what that offer sheet is, I've got to make a decision on whether or not I want to match that and keep him here. And if I do, there may be some decisions that I'm going to have to make with other contracts that are on that are on this team locked into next year. And, you know, if you want to move Andrew Wiggins' contract, that's not going to be an easy contract to move.
No.
If you want to move Gorgui Dieng's contract, it's not going to be an easy contract to move. It's not going to be like, hey, you want Andrew Wiggins? Here, you can have him. Like, people, I mean, look, Myron, earlier this week, we had Danny Cunningham and I, we had Matt Thomas on Raised by Wolves earlier this week. And we were talking about, and Matt is the play-by-play voice of the Rockets, and he does public address announcing for the Rockets home games. And we asked him about, you know, his viewpoint on the Wolves, because he got a good look at the Wolves when they played the Rockets in the playoffs last year. And, you know, obviously he was going to get a good look at them on Wednesday. And we just asked him, like, what was your thoughts on the Wolves? And he went right into Tom Thibodeau, and he went right into Andrew Wiggins. Like, and his whole deal was just like, does Andrew Wiggins give a damn? Does he care?
Yeah.
And if and that told me that, look, the issues that everybody locally here has with Andrew Wiggins, it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah.
It's not a secret anymore. Everybody else around the league knows what the deal is with Andrew Wiggins, and they're all sort of raising their eyebrows like, why the hell can't this kid put it together? Why isn't he putting it together? And if that's the case, it's going to be hard to move him, man. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's going to be hard to convince somebody else to be like, you know, if you want to move on with Andrew Wiggins, which I'm not sure that they want to do yet, but if you want to move on with him, it's going to be hard to convince somebody to just take him.
100%, but this is why you're so smart on basketball, Manny, okay? Like, what you just described is the difference between the emotional conversation we have about Andrew Wiggins and the personnel conversation we need to have about Andrew Wiggins. Mm-hmm. The emotional thing is something we've been having for how long? From the day he arrived.
Yeah.
Does he have it? Does he have the juice? Does he have, you know, sort of that energy? Is he invested? Does he care? Like, this is a puzzle that people have been trying to solve since he arrived. Not even since he arrived. I talked to a guy who knew him when he was a kid in Canada, when he was dominating in Canada as a seventh and eighth grader. And he said, yeah, we all saw that because this was a guy who just went through the motions. He was so gifted at a young age, he didn't have to invest some of the emotions and intangibles that other kids had to have. And now that's the result that you're seeing right now. Guys in Canada, Manny, are saying we knew this Andrew Wiggins was coming. We understood the limitations of Andrew Wiggins. Mm. That, to me, is an emotional conversation. Can you encourage this guy who appears to have all this athletic ability to invest more in putting together the full package? Separate conversation from the real conversation that the next GM is going to have, or if it's Scott Layden. How on earth do you deal with the reality that he is getting paid way too much money and that this contract is a problem for the future of the franchise? I don't care if that person, whoever's in that job, whether it's Scott Layden or somebody else, has emotion about that. As a matter of fact, I don't want that dude to have emotion. I don't want him to sit there and go, well, is this guy going to become someone else? Does he care? I don't want that GM or that executive to have those conversations. I want that guy to say, look, either we can do something with this contract and we can make it worth our while, and we think that Andrew Wiggins is going to blossom into a player who at least gives us a fraction of value on this deal, or we're going to make a miracle and find a way to get rid of this contract, because that's the only solution when it comes to Andrew Wiggins. And if you don't solve that problem, your entire franchise is going to suffer as a result. That is separate from the barbershop sports bar conversations, Manny, we keep having about Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
Is anybody ever going to connect him? I don't know. Is anybody ever going to figure out how to crack the code? I don't know. I've talked to people in Canada who didn't crack the code, who wondered whether he had it when he was a younger player, wondered whether he had it when he was in college. And here he is as a young NBA player. People are still questioning the same thing. Maybe this just is who he is. But Manny, I want an executive who can separate himself or herself from that emotion conversation and just get right down to the only thing that matters. Can you keep Andrew Wiggins and get some value out of that deal? Or how on earth are you going to put something together to get rid of that contract so everybody can move on?
And you have a gigantic elephant in the room that is your franchise player in Karl Anthony Towns. And you've got him locked up in a new contract. And early on, you don't really have to worry about him wanting out or anything like that. You don't have to worry about an Anthony Davis type situation yet. But a lot of the decisions and the moves and the draft picks and the free agent signings and the trades that they're going to make over the next couple of years in trying to build this team back into being a winner is, I mean, all of that stuff is going to be so vital. And their margin for error, Myron, right now is like razor thin. It's razor thin because of the hefty contracts and the lack of production that they're getting out of those hefty contracts. It's so vital that every draft pick that they make that they hit on it, or that they, you know, if they package it as part of another trade, that they get good value in return, or a good player, a veteran player, or something like that. This lottery pick that they're probably going to have, because I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, they got to hit on it, Ryan or Myron.
Yeah.
They got to hit on it. They just have to.
And the problem with it, Manny, is that this draft ain't all that. I mean, this is one of those drafts where you
outside
got
of the top three guys, top three or four guys, man, it's
and there are
a
no guarantees
shoot.
There. I mean, there are right. no guarantees there either.
I know.
So to your point, you got to find somebody who can mine this thing, and find a gem, if you will. Find somebody, man, who is better than where they're picked. Because we just started talking. We started this segment talking about Dale Demps, and if you're a Timberwolves fan, right? What's your nightmare, Manny? It's the Anthony Davis situation. Mm-hmm. 3 years from now, it's Karl Towns who's probably mingling with all of these pros who are going, "Hey, man, you still in Minnesota? Oh, come on, man, come on! In 2022, man, you got to come with us, man. Hey, Karl, why don't you come hang out with us this summer? We're all going to Greece. We're all going to Paris. Why don't you come hang out?" And all of a sudden, Karl Towns comes back from All-Star Weekend, going, "You know what? I just left." Hanging out with all these guys who are bragging about all the talent they have around them, who are bragging about all of the free agents that their teams have been able to sign. And here I am with no moves at the trade deadline, hoping that something's going to happen with my buddy's $150 million deal. And you know, being even more hopeful that maybe something comes out of this draft, which isn't that good. That, to me, is how Anthony Davis started a couple years ago with the Pelicans. It was great young star. Then he blossoms into a top five player, man. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes, you know what? I should be a champion. And you get that idea in your head when you're at that level, and other people around you, being around these stars, they emphasize that idea. And then you start, then you go and you come out one day and you said, "I want to trade. And if you don't trade me, this is not going to be a fun year for you." And now Dale Demps just got fired. And I'm from Milwaukee. Giannis, that's the fear there.
Giannis, right? Is going to be the next guy. I was just going to touch on that. Giannis, once the Anthony Davis thing is resolved, Giannis is going to be the next guy that everybody's looking at saying, okay, how's he
who's
feel?
After him? And who's after him, Manny?
It's probably going to be Cat, right?
Right. How do they keep him happy? Like, what has to happen in this offseason to put Cat in a place where he feels like starting this Supermax deal, you know what? This is a place where I can win. What has to happen?
They have to draft well. They have to, they have to draft well. They have to manage their cap right. And they have to make the right decisions. And they have to get the right personnel guy in place. They got to get the right coach in place. But the personnel guy, the GM, whoever that's going to be, it has to be the right guy, and it has to be a guy that's capable of making the right decisions. Otherwise, you're going to be, like we said before, you're going to be in the same situation that they were in with Anthony Davis, with the Pelicans.
We didn't mention Ryan Saunders in there, Manny. You didn't say Ryan Saunders, did you? You didn't say who's the head coach has this role. No, you talked about personnel decisions.
Yeah.
That is the most significant element. I was at with a team a couple weeks back, and Lawrence Frank, who's the Clippers GM, talked to the team, and he made the statement which really stuck with me. He said, the stars are overrated in the NBA. Yes, they're great, but there aren't that many of them. 65% of the players in the NBA, he said, Manny, are role players, mm-hmm. right? That, to me, is what a GM has to do. You've got to go through that. You know that pool of DVDs at the Walmart, right, where it's $5, and if you dig to the bottom, you might find Forrest Gump, right? Right? You might find some great movie that you might find an E.T. You might find something that you haven't watched in a while if you dig deep enough. Bargain bin. You need a GM who can go into the bargain bin of the NBA and pull out a player who can help this team excel. The Clippers did something interesting too, Manny. They hired Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated to be essentially their executive director of research and identity. His job right now basically is to figure out the personalities and the makeups of potential draft picks or potential players that the team may trade for. Mm. I think that's genius.
Yeah.
Because then maybe if you have someone like that, maybe when you get a Wiggins, you know a little bit more about his makeup before you end up drafting, before you end up getting a guy like that. You understand a little bit about, you know, how he is built. How he's wired. But that bargain bin, man, like that to me is going to change this franchise. The stars, you're just not going to get any of them. Unless they have some really good relationship with Karl Towns and a trade works out. you're not going to get one of those big pieces who can come over and change your franchise. You're going to have to get, like you said, Mandy, two, three, four of those bargain bin guys who can help you excel, who can blossom. And you can put a rookie in that bargain bin, too, yeah, if you get some guy who is in the mix. Now, let me ask you this. They're a lottery team, let's say. Let's say something crazy happens, right? And let's say they ended up at the number one pick. It's not going to happen, but let's say it did.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take Zion Williamson?
Absolutely.
You take him over R.J. Barrett?
Without question. And yeah. I like R.J. Barrett a lot. I'm high on R.J. Barrett. I'm high on Cam Reddish. But Zion is, I mean, if you get the number one pick, I'm taking Zion Williamson without hesitation.
Can I tell you something?
Okay.
That is my pick for every other team in the NBA except the Timberwolves.
Really?
It's R.J. Barrett.
Okay.
It's R.J. Barrett because I think R.J. can be what Wiggins is not. Like, I think R.J. could come in. He's such a natural scorer. I asked his dad a couple weeks ago. I said, what's R.J. Barrett's greatest gift? He said his greatest gift is winning. He said, dude just wins. I mean, that's all he knows.
Mm.
And I thought that was a profound statement, man. Like, usually I talk to guys like that, and they're like, oh, man, he could – you know, he can go left to right, or he's got range back to the NBA three. His dad said, no, man, winning is his greatest asset, man. I think I would be compelled in that scenario, considering everything we just said about Andrew Wiggins, in terms of getting a score in a league that's getting bigger and smaller at the same time with all these small ball lineups that teams are playing. I'd go with R.J. Barrett, man. I would pick R.J., and I think R.J. might be more NBA ready. But maybe I'm crazy. It wouldn't be my first bad decision or the first time I got a pick wrong.
Well, it's not like people aren't high on R.J. Barrett, though. You know what I mean? So it's like, I see what you're saying.
Well, he's kind of forgotten, though, in the Zion hype.
Sure.
Like, everyone talks so much about Zion. And I keep telling people, forget Zion in terms of whether or not he'll be a bust. Or people are like, well, what if he's a bust? You can't be a bust.
He's not going to be a bust.
Well, but let's say he is on the court. This guy is about to sign the biggest rookie deal in NBA history since LeBron when it comes to shoes. He's about to sign the biggest shoe deal since LeBron James that we have seen. Like, this guy's going to have $100 million just off of merchandising when he comes into the league. People have no idea how big he is. So he's not going to need basketball. But I am interested to see where he plays. I think the bigger question, Manny, is, he's 282 pounds of muscle right now. You and I know, as guys in our 30s, big guys, like, you know, that can change, buddy. You know, you can be Zion eating Big Macs at 22 and everything's cool. And you get to 32, brother, and all of a sudden things change, man. So does he keep the weight off? I think that's going to be a big thing with him. But there's not a lot beneath those guys in the draft. Yeah. Like, there's not a lot beneath them. As a guy who covers all these guys, there aren't many guys where I look up and go, yeah, that guy will help you right away. A Keldon Johnson at Kentucky is a great example. I think he's a nice player. I really do. I don't know that he comes here NBA ready. I don't know what sort of impact
might
he makes.
Might take some time.
But he's a top 10 pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ja Morant, people have been talking about the Murray State kid who's averaging like 25 and 10. I like him a lot. He's doing this at a much lower level. And he's thin. He's a thin kid. So without any guarantees in this draft, with this big contract sitting right there, and you got to figure out something about it, Manny, GM, whoever it is,
yeah,
will change this franchise for better or worse in the coming years. That is the most important position, not named Karl Anthony Towns, to me, in this entire franchise.
Yeah, I'd 100% agree. And I'll keep saying it until I'm blue in the face that every move that they make here from here on out, like, their margin for error for, you know, whiffing on a draft pick. I mean, they've already whiffed in terms of giving people contracts, and, you know, I think they made a really good draft pick for where they were picking with Josh Okogie at 20. They've gotten some good value out of that. I think Josh is going to be a really good player for a long time. Yeah. But that's the sort of thing, Myron, too. Like, they gotta start hitting on more of that too. Because
yeah,
as they try and build this team up, and they, you know, if they're not gonna be high in the lottery, if they're not going to be a top three or four pick team, they've got to find, even if it's a guy that people aren't really expecting to be all that good, they've got to hit on those draft picks. If they end up with the 10th pick in the draft, they got to hit on it. They just have to. And, you know, they need to have more Josh Okogie's types of situations come about, because, like you said, they're not going to be able to go out in free agency and sign people.
Yeah.
You know, and those big contracts that they have right now are very, if you're moving those contracts, you're moving them to move them. You're not moving them really to get huge value in return, because an Andrew Wiggins or a Gorgui Dieng is not going to give you a lot in return in a trade in terms of value.
Yeah. All great points as usual. We're going to talk about the draft, college basketball, and even some NBA with my guy Rob Doster of NBC Sports. When we come back, Myron on Hoops after this.
Score North.
And what's that supposed to mean?
Minnesota sports. Anytime, anywhere. ScoreNorth.com.
Myron Metcalf back here on Myron on Hoops on Score North, ScoreNorth.com. Well, my man Manny Fresh Hill, as always, we got a special guest, Mr. Rob Doster of NBC Sports. Manny, he started out as a writer and blogger. Now he's on TV. So I'm not sure if he has to cut the interview off like a few minutes in. I don't know what his obligations may be. He's wearing tailored suits. He's in a different zone now, right, Rob? It's a different level.
Yeah, man. I feel good. You know, I'm dressing better. And you know what they say, man. You look good, you feel good.
Hey, you are doing some good work on that, man. Man, for real. That's a cool gig you got, and keep doing well with it.
I'll try, man. I'll do my best. I'm trying to make you proud, Myron.
Before we jump into some college basketball stuff, All-Star Weekend is this weekend. That didn't make sense. Well, it made sense, but not really. Vince Carter, between the legs dunk, 2000. Where were you when it happened?
Oh, man. I was watching it at home. I think I was 15 years old when it happened. And I remember just watching it at home, being baffled, like, wow, did that just happen? Like, I feel like we don't get that anymore in dunk contests, right? Like, I remember growing up, that was the thing that you looked forward to on All-Star Weekend. Like, there were those moments where you would have battles and you were waiting for something like that to happen. And I feel like it's been a while since we just had an iconic dunk contest. And I hope we get it again, man, but it just seems like it doesn't make sense for some of these stars to come out here and do what they did in the past. Let me ask you this, Myron. If Zion Williamson was in the All-Star dunk contest this weekend, would anybody beat him?
No, they wouldn't. Because you know why I think he would win? Is because he's got the Vince Carter athleticism and explosiveness, but his power combined with that would just be so different. Like I was saying on the show earlier, Rob, I went to a Duke practice before the season. He got a rebound, dribbled once, 1 foot inside the free throw line, almost dunked it two-handed. Like he missed it, but he was over the rim. Like we've never seen anything like this dude, man. Like he's just unique. And
the thing that I love about him is he understands that he is like the presence that he has. And he also gets that people want to see what he does. And my favorite thing that he did, it was the Duke Texas Tech game at Madison Square Garden. And you know, he's in New York City. And all of New York City media is there. Yeah. Everybody's there early to watch warm-ups. There's probably like 500 people just standing around the court, either with a press pass or standing in like the front row of the seats, just waiting for him to do some of these dunks in the warm-ups. And he comes out and he tries a couple and throws a couple up the back of the rim. And then he finally throws one down. And I mean, it was ridiculous. He took off from like the top hash of the free throw line and dunked it. And it didn't even look like he was trying. But then after that, all he started doing was like jellying and finger rolling and laying the ball in and then shooting a couple pull-up threes. And then every time he laid the ball in, you could just hear this groan come on throughout the crowd. And it was very obvious that he knew that people were there to see him and he wasn't going to give it away for free.
He's the show, man, and he gets it. Can anybody beat Duke? Like in a single elimination tournament where you're going to have to figure out how to get ready for 3, 6, 6, 6, 7 top five picks, a point guard in Trey Jones, who might be the best on-ball defender in the country. Will they lose? I mean, how would they lose if it were to happen in the NCAA tournament?
I think we've seen it with what Louisville did, what Syracuse did, what Virginia tried to do in the two times that they played, is when they're not making their shots, they can be one of these teams that gets very, like, the way I like to phrase it is they're a
Did we lose him? We might have lost.
I'll check with him here.
We might have lost Rob, but to his point, that Duke team is a lot of people hit me up all the time. Why are you so high on Duke? Why do you talk about Duke all the time? Why are you always writing about Zion? Well, it's because this is the greatest show I've ever seen, man. This is by far and you know what's going to happen is when people play Duke in the NCAA tournament, they don't want to answer the phone either, right? Because they're going to say, oh, wait a minute, you know, we're playing that. We're playing Zion. We're playing Cam Reddish. We're playing Trey Jones. Like this to me, and I've been around for the Fab Five, and I've been around for all those great Duke teams and Kentucky teams and Arizona team. My favorite team of all time was the Arizona team in 97. I've seen some great teams. I have never seen a show like the one that Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, Trey Jones, RJ Barrett, and this Duke team are putting on right now. And social media helps because now anytime a Zion will dunk or do something fabulous, we see it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You didn't have that with LeBron James when he was in high school at St. Vincent, St. Mary's. You didn't have that kind of an impact there. So it is a show, man, and it's the best show that I've seen to this point.
Yeah, and we do have Rob back on the line. I was able to get him back on the line here.
So, Rob, keep going, man. You were talking about this Duke team and what other squads were doing to kind of make things interesting for them.
Oh, yeah, they dare them to make shots on the perimeter and beat them that way. And, you know, if Duke does what they did at Virginia in that game, where what was it? They made, you were there, man. They made, what, 13 of their first 18?
It's crazy. Yeah.
And I think it was like the five in a row to start the game. If Duke's going to shoot like that, nobody is going to beat them. And I don't think it'll be – I think Virginia was impressed to keep it within 10, to be honest. But if they do what they did against Louisville for the first 30 minutes where they just – their shots aren't going down, it looks like they're not playing with any energy, they don't have any – you know, they're not active on the defensive end of the floor, then you can beat them. And it kind of reminds me of – remember that 2010 Kentucky team?
I mean,
had John Wall, Aaron Flint, Marcus Cousins, Patrick Peterson. And they ended up losing in the Elite Eight because they shot, I think it was, what, like 4-for-32 from three in that game? And if this Duke team is going to lose, it's going to take something like that. And I certainly think that's within, you know, it's within the realm of possibility against a team like a Tennessee or a Michigan or like a Texas Tech, somebody that is really good defensively and is going to make shots over the top of their defense. There might be a game where Duke ends up going 2-for-20 from three. And if that happens, then they could end up getting picked off. You know, if this was a 7-game series type deal, then I don't think anybody would be able to beat Duke the same way I don't think anyone is going to be able to beat the Warriors. But the Warriors have lost the first game of playoff series before. And if that happens to Duke this year, the, you know, 1-game knockout series, anything could happen.
Rob, great segue because I want to ask you about my Tennessee Vols. I'm a big Tennessee Vols fan. And how likely are they going to make it here to Minneapolis for the Final Four in your mind? How good are they?
They have the makeup of the teams that have won national titles in recent years, right? You look at the last three title winners. It's been Villanova twice, and it's been North Carolina. And those have been teams full of upperclassmen that play hard, that really embrace this idea of being a team and being a program and playing for each other and everybody understanding their role. And, you know, guys that weren't necessarily the most highly touted guys coming out of high school. You know, obviously there were NBA players on those rosters and Jalen Brunson, Justin Jackson, Joe Berry, guys like that were McDonald's All-Americans. But we're not talking about one-and-done talents, top five prospects, surefire NBA All-Stars on those rosters. And I think that's what we see with this Tennessee team. And, you know, I love teams that play that way, that play together, that you know what you're going to get every single night, and guys that just kind of buy into their roles. And I think that's more important than anything. When you just understand what you're supposed to do. Like, Admiral Schofield has no, like, there's no misunderstanding about what his job is on a basketball court. You know, go out there, make threes, be tough defensively, and create those mismatches when you're put at the four. You know, Kyle Alexander, he knows what his job is. I think the perfect example with that team is Jordan Bowden, right? Like, he basically started the first, 75 games of his college basketball career. And then a month and a half into the season, Rick Barnes was like, okay, we're going to bring you off the bench. And I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, but he didn't really complain. And now he's become their microwave score, and he's averaging something like 12 or 13 points off the bench. And I think it's made Tennessee not only a better team, but a much more dangerous offensive team. And it's things like that I think sets them apart, you know, to add on to the fact they do have some guys that are probably going to end up being NBA players.
Rob, we're here in Big Ten country in Minneapolis where, you know, a lot of folks are trying to figure out if Minnesota gets in to the NCAA tournament. But bigger than that, like, I watched the Big Ten, and I do think this is probably the deepest conference in America, right? I don't know if they have a Final Four team. Like, I'm not convinced they have a team that can go and win it all. But as you know, Rob, I've been wrong before. What's your thoughts on that league and what they might be able to do in March?
So I would not be surprised to see Michigan find a way to get to the Final Four because of how good they are defensively and, you know, the fact that John Beilein is John Beilein. He's going to find a way to be able to take advantage of whatever matchups they have. You know, there's a reason he's been as successful as he's been in the tournament. Same thing with Tom Izzo. Yeah. You know, I would not be surprised to see them there, but I don't necessarily think, I agree with you in the sense that they're not the teams that I would bet are surefire Final Four teams. Like, I think that there are four that we can all agree are probably the top four teams in the country at this point, and it's Tennessee, Gonzaga, Duke, and Virginia. There's no Big Ten teams that would be in that conversation for me. I think they'd probably have a little bit more of a floor. I don't know how you guys feel about Purdue and Wisconsin, but I don't necessarily trust either of them. I think Purdue is just, they're too reliant on Carson Edwards, you know, and to win four games against three that are probably going to be top 25 caliber teams is a tough ask when your offense is built around a guy that's going to be taking 25 footers off the dribble. And then Wisconsin, look, I love Ethan Happ more than just about anybody, man. He is an unbelievable college basketball player. But when your best player is as inefficient as he can be, you know, with the fact that he can't really, there's times where he kind of struggles to score over people in the post, and he can't make free throws. When your best player, the guy that you need to score in the post for you to win, isn't going to make free throws, that is a major, major problem for Wisconsin when it comes to winning close games and beating good teams in those close games.
Yeah. Rob, as always, man, you do great work, man. Definitely thank you for your time.
I'm glad you finally got me on, Myron. I feel good. I can check this one off on my resume.
Hey, man, do good work this weekend, man. That's Rob Doster from NBC Sports, NBCSports.com, writer, TV talent as well. We're going to talk about the NCAA tournament and whether Richard has to get there to save his job. We'll be back on Myron on Hoops.
This feels right. Let's pursue this further. Score North. Minnesota sports. Anytime, anywhere. ScoreNorth.com.
Myron Metcalf back here on Myron on Hoops with Manny Fresh Hill. Talking all things hoops, and there's obviously a lot going on. Before we get to that, I want to ask you the same question that I asked our last guest, Rob Doster. Where were you during the Vince Carter dunk contest, Manny?
I was at home watching it. This was 2000, right?
Yes.
I was at home watching it. I was 15 years old.
Okay.
This was my sophomore year of high school. I'll never forget it. And it was crazy. Like, I just couldn't believe, like, because I remember watching Vince Carter play at North Carolina and everything. Yeah. And obviously had gotten a chance to follow him with the Raptors at that point. And it was amazing, man. It really sort of changed the viewpoint of the dunk contest. Because by then, the dunk contest had kind of started to fade off a little bit. You know, it just wasn't quite the same, like, post-Jordan and Dominique era, that whole run. And then we had the mid-90s with, you know, J.R. Ryder and Harold Miner, and they had the fun dunk contest in the mid-90s. But there, you know, towards the latter portion of the 90s, it started to sort of tail off a little bit, and people were kind of like, I don't know. And then Vince came on the scene, man, and just ripped it up. It was incredible. I'll never forget that night. It was great.
Yeah, and that was one of the last dunk contests where, you know, you weren't talking on social media. Like, I remember a bunch of my buddies and I went to my friend DB's place. It was actually the night of we had a snow coming dance, they called it in high school. Which was like, instead of homecoming, you know, the girls asked the guys and pay for the dates and all that. Now, we have been suspended from snow coming due to an incident that happened at a pep rally, which it wasn't. It was harmless, but it turned into a thing. Basically, we had class of 2001, like in tape, written on our shorts. And we did this dance with the drill team. Mm-hmm. And then we all pulled down like our warm ups. We had on shorts, though. And it said class of 2001, except my buddy Joe accidentally pulled everything down.
Whoops.
And it turned into a thing. And let's just say that we were advised after that incident that we were not allowed to come to the snow coming dance. But it worked out because it just so happened to be the night of the Vince Carter dunk contest. So we went to dinner with our dates, and then we went to my buddy DB's house and watched the dunk contest. And for me, it was like an experience, man. Because like you said, before that, we'd seen MJ, free throw line. We'd seen all these dunks. Mm-hmm. But you could tell that Vince Carter, like, put something in it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just sort of
he injected some energy into it.
Yeah. He put some thought into it. And it was a reminder of like, the All-Star Weekend is a great way to raise your profile. Like, there are a lot of guys who maybe were stars, but then they came to this weekend, had a breakout performance. I saw somebody put Kyrie Irving's performance in the Rising Stars game in like 2012, you know, where I think Drew Holiday, I think, fell or someone he made fall. But like, this can be a big moment for a Josh Okogie. It could be always a big moment for a Karl Towns. Like, for these younger guys, man, the All-Star Weekend is a chance to like announce that, hey, man, if you don't know me, you will.
You know?
And this could be that kind of opportunity. Cat is known, he's an All-Star, but hey, man, I'm not sitting at the little kids' table anymore. You guys need to acknowledge me for what I'm doing up here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, and I look at Josh Okogie with the Rising Stars Challenge, and I just you look at the way he plays with so much energy. Like, yeah. That's just a perfect environment for him to be a part of, because he's going to be – I just feel like he's going to be all over the place. Like, he's going to be one of the guys that – yeah, I mean, there's going to be – the big names there. I mean, Luka's going to be in the game, and we know how big of a phenomenon Luka Doncic has become, and, you know, Trae Young and all those guys. But Okogie's one of those guys that I could envision sort of – he's the guy – he's going to be one of those guys that nobody's really talking about, and then he ends up sort of making a name for himself just because he plays with so much energy, and he's just all over the place, and he's such a disruptive player defensively, that I feel like this is an opportunity for him to really show the rest of the league that he has a chance to be a pretty good player.
Yeah, and it's also an opportunity for him to take a nap. Like you need to rest, man. Like, go to sleep.
Yeah, he says like, nonstop. Call him nonstop, man.
Like, he strikes me as the dude that goes to bed at 3 and wakes up at 4:30. Like, take a nap, man. It's vacation, Josh. Goodness, man, that dude has so much energy. I went to a press conference a couple weeks ago, and that dude was bouncing in the hallways for no reason. Like, he's just one of those dudes, man. And you know, we joke about him, but the Houston Rockets, the block, I call it the block on the beard.
Mm-hmm.
What was so impressive about it for me, and just that whole game and his energy, is I really think that he cares about improvement in ways that Andrew Wiggins does not appear to care. And I think that's why people appreciate him. They look at Josh and they go, man, Andrew, that dude has a fraction of your God-given ability or your gifts, you know, some of your raw tools. And that dude plays 10 times as hard as you do.
Wasn't drafted high.
And even where he was drafted, it was sort of like, okay, hit a few threes, but he went to Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is he going to do? You know, who is this guy? And here he is, man, making people go, yeah, that's how I want the players on this team to play. And here's Andrew Wiggins out, and people are going, man, maybe they're a better team. But his heart and his spirit, man, I'll tell you who it reminds me of, and I don't want to say this name because I've tried to avoid saying this name on any show because he frustrates me, but young Jimmy Butler. Young Jimmy Butler had that fire. Before he got money and got weird and got arrogant and stopped caring about being that blue-collar guy who'd worked his way up from a nobody to playing with the Bulls, like, Josh could be that kind of guy, man, that kind of blue-collar guy who's just really ready. He's here to earn it, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I love watching him play. And I love Karl Anthony Towns' reaction to watching a dude like that play. It's like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's the juice we need.
Feed off his energy.
And everybody seems to be getting a slice of that energy, man. And, wow, I love watching him play, and I'm happy to see him tonight, too.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting, and I think if there's reason for optimism with the Wolves going forward. I mean, obviously so much has been made about Wiggins and the contract and, you know, the coaching change and all of that stuff and who's going to take over. I think outside of Karl Anthony Towns, if there's a level of optimism to be had, I think Josh Okogie is providing that. And if he can continue to do that and, you know, Ryan Saunders is giving him opportunities to play and have a significant role that maybe Tom Thibodeau wasn't providing for him early on. I mean, I think it's been good, and I think it's, if there is some reason for some optimism right now for the team going forward, I think Josh Okogie is providing a lot of that.
Hey man, you take what you can get. You got a guy like that, you know, playing tonight, and you got Karl Anthony Towns in the All-Star game. That's something. A whole lot of teams wish they had something like that. The Gophers men's basketball team wouldn't have any players, I don't think, in an All-Star game if they were in that situation, just because obviously they've lost a bunch of games in a row. Here they are. That Nebraska game was terrible in terms of how it ended, that foul. But those are the things that happen when the sky is falling. Like everything kind of goes against you, and it feels like the Govers are in that situation. Let me ask you this, Manny.
Okay.
Do you see a scenario where Richard Pitino keeps his job?
Like beyond this season?
Yeah, I mean, where he's the coach next year.
Yeah, I do. And I think it's largely because it seems like Mark Coyle, the athletic director, really likes him. Yeah. I think the only way I could see him losing his job, whether it's right or wrong, is if these last six games that they have, if they just completely fall apart and just completely melt down. If it's like a 2-4 or 1-5 type of finish these last six games, then I could see them making a change. But I don't know, man. It's rather it's right or wrong, it just seems like there's gonna be, you know, another year for him, even if they don't make the NCAA tournament. And I got mixed feelings on that, and you know, I look at it like this. Like, he's been here for 6 years, and they've got one NCAA tournament appearance so far, and they're going to have to be scratching and clawing to try and get into it this year, it seems like. Yeah. So, I don't know, man.
Tubby got fired for a lot less.
Yeah.
And he had a national championship ring on his finger when he came. I mean,
he made the tournament 3 times in 6 years and got fired.
Exactly.
Yeah. After winning a tournament game, he got fired.
To me, the problem is, is there a road for Richard Pitino to be more than this? More than a guy who gets this team to the bubble every year? Like, that's going to be the question for me when it comes to Mark Coyle. I think you make a great point, Manny. They've lost 4 in a row. I don't know if people follow KenPom.com. Other than the Indiana game tomorrow, they're projected to lose the rest of their games and finish 8-12.
Even at Northwestern, huh?
They're projected to lose the rest of their games and finish 8-12 in the league. Oof. If they get blown out and they lose a bunch of those games, to me, Manny, even if they limp into the tournament, this is a team that could lose by 15 in that first round game.
Yeah.
Like, that scenario is one where you go, okay, yeah, you got in, but you're also embarrassed when you got there.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the thing, man, when it comes to Richard Pitino and the Gophers. How do they finish? What does Mark Coyle want to do? But there are a lot of futures at stake here in the final weeks of the seasons for both the Timberwolves and the Minnesota Golden Gophers with Manny Fresh Hill. Great job as always. I'm Myron on Myron on Hoops. We'll see you next week.